Movie theaters are modern-day pulpits. Real-world theology exists to shed a light on the narratives that are shaping our culture and to remind viewers that entertainment is not mindless.
Welcome to Real World Theology, episode 105. On this episode, we're talking about Star Trek Beyond. To help me do that, we have brought on a supersized sci-fi crew, including Mike Petit from The Sci-Fi Christian, Reed Lackey from More Than One Lesson, and our very own Mark Wingerter. So, in Star Trek Beyond, this movie from Simon Pegg and directed by Justin Lin, we get to talk about Star Trek's humanism. We get to talk about the lessons for the future and what Star Trek kind of pushes us towards. We also get to nerd out because this is a really fun movie. So it's a great conversation. I think you're going to like it. In the meantime, make sure you're checking out realworldtheology.com, where we have tons of new content every day. You can find what we're posting over on our Facebook page, or most importantly, join our Facebook discussion group where you'll have lots of awesome conversations. You can talk about the episode, things like that. Follow us on Twitter, subscribe to the podcast, and guys, I can't stress enough how much it means to us when you give us 5-star reviews and leave us some feedback. It pushes our rankings in iTunes, more people find us, more people get involved in the conversation, and we really, really, really enjoy that. So if you have a chance, please do that. We will be forever grateful. So, in the meantime, find us wherever you find podcasts out there. And this is a really great show. Here it is, episode 105, Star Trek Beyond, and the best of humanity. I don't know how anyone else kind of splices their time or splices their writing or their creativity into their normal day. Like, we all don't get, I don't paid like Mark does to write as a living. So unfortunately, but especially now with a child, and kind of having like a job and a half and lots of responsibilities, I don't have that time just to sit around and ponder my craft. So I realized that most of my creative thoughts, my best creative thoughts, happen between 6:30 and 7 in the morning in the shower. Like,
I'm not up that early.
I'm just there in the shower. No one's bothering me. I just started my day, so I'm not thinking about all the things that I have to do.
I'm not up that early. Maybe I need to be up at 6:30.
So the more
that's
thing,
when like
that's the, when it hits.
Yeah, the muse goddesses come down and
well let me ask this. So do you wake up like kind of like on the go? Like you get up and you have to go like right away.
Yeah.
Like there's no stop.
Yeah.
There's no pause.
Yeah, basically.
Yeah, so that's how my day was. And I just started taking longer showers in the morning and it made me get up like 10 minutes earlier.
Well, I exercise in the morning, so it's kind of like, yes, to answer
your
question.
But you're like listening to something, or you're like watching something, probably?
No, because I do that all day. So I'm usually riding my bike.
Staring at the wall?
Yeah, it's nice to be out just outside riding a bike with no screen in front of me and nothing in my ears.
No.
Yeah.
So I do most of my thinking. Like I said, so nothing really. I get up, I get my son up, I change his diaper, I hand him to my wife, and then I shower.
Nice.
And so before I've gotten into my day, I'm sitting there. That's when I have my best podcast ideas. There's got to be a device. There's got to be a device that I can start recording things in the shower.
So, and then what time do they disappear from your brain?
I get out of the shower. Okay. I want everyone to go through my day with me. This is very important.
Right. I'm writing notes.
Lots of you in the shower.
Yes.
That's all I've got so far.
There's a lot of me in the shower.
Yeah.
Okay. I mean, like physically, there's a lot of me in the shower. And then there's an extended period of time being in the shower. So all the ways.
Got that.
Fully present in the shower mentally.
I think I understand.
My soul is showering.
Okay.
Okay.
I'm standing in my shower right now. Should I be doing that?
Yes. This is one of those immersive kind of stories.
I thought so.
I'm in there. I'm doing my thing. I finally get out. I usually have to will myself out of the shower because I'm usually having like this great train of thought. Like, oh man, this would make a great podcast. Oh, this is how I should write this article. Mm-hmm. Or, oh, this is how I should get on Mark's case for not getting me what he told me he'd get to me in the time that he told me he'd get to me. And these are the way he's going to fight back. And I'm going to be like, I know you're doing it for free, but that doesn't matter. You promise. So we have all these conversations in my head. I get out of the shower. I put my clothes on and then I start day mode. Day mode is like, you walk to the kitchen, you pack your lunch, I go feed the chickens, I water the garden, I make sure the lights are on in the house, I'm doing the thing, I'm packing my bag, making sure I've got my computer. And once that starts, I'm in my day has started mode. And so I'm remembering things and I'm thinking about like tasks I have to do for the day. So my day has shifted from like almost like nothing's asking anything of me for that half hour. Nothing's really, I'm just free to like get up and think about whatever comes in my mind first, not what's next. So that's probably my favorite part of the day.
What podcast is this?
This is the...
Where are we going?
This is the listener advice podcast.
Showers, so, I have one.
Yes. So what I'm saying is we all shower, and that's why we're here.
That's it.
That's it.
Thanks for being here, everybody.
Yeah.
Yes.
So it's my new children's book, Everyone Showers. So that's where I would do my best thinking about getting ready for a podcast like this.
Uh-huh.
I would say, what did I think about Star Trek Beyond? Or, whatever movie I saw. Because I get out of the theater, and it's really interesting. I'm more of an internal processor.
Uh-huh.
My wife's an external processor. So when we go to a movie, she just starts talking about what she saw in the film.
Yes.
And she's like, didn't you think that this was amazing? I'm like, there was explosions and I liked it. I didn't fall asleep. Like, that's where I'm usually at. And it's not until that next day, that next morning, that I'm in the shower. I'm just thinking about like, God, that was so much fun. That was like a party on screen. That was what I wanted it to be. Or, inversely, if I saw a bad film, I'm like, I'm just not even thinking about it. And if I'm not even thinking about it, which has happened to so many films for me in 2016, just...
Mm. So let's recap
Okay. Real
quick. Shower.
Shower.
Star Trek.
Star Trek.
Some kind of segue in between.
Okay. Totally happened.
It's a lot of alliteration there. Yeah. I'm very appreciative of that.
I mean, I'm trying
shower, to... Shower, segue, Star Trek.
No, so what I'm saying, Mark, is I'm beyond the shower now.
I see what you did there.
Yep. So I have my opening volley question about Star Trek Beyond. And listeners, you may notice that we have one extra voice than we normally have. Because in my eyes, setting the stage, this has been the best summer movie that I've seen. So I just put my cards on the table.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I mean, when you talk about summer movies, I know it's not like it's not going to be on anyone's top 50 list, anyone's, whatever bet. It's not going to win an Oscar for screenwriting or anything like that. But when I think of summer movies and how we get excited every year for summer movies, this to me has been the best one that I've seen.
So what you're saying is this show is a summer supersize Star Trek shower show.
Exactly.
Oh my gosh.
Faux shizzle. You're good at that. You should be a writer.
I just did that. Yeah.
so we have, like I said, we have one more person than we normally do. So it's gonna be possibly a little bit longer than a normal show. But I did that because I want as many voices on this show as possible, because I think there's people watching this movie and it's a lot of fun. And I think we could have a pretty great discussion, especially about something that I really enjoyed. So we have Mark, who's in studio. No one can see me doing bunny ears on the pocket.
Yeah.
In studio.
You've always done it. It's okay.
Yeah. My basement, yeah. Which doesn't actually require bunny ears, even though I did it again, because it's actually my basement.
It is actually your basement.
And then we have Reed, who has been on the show before from More Than One Lesson and some other new stuff that I will let him either tell you about or choose not to tell you about.
I will reserve just a quick stay tuned. I will say that I'm starting my own podcast soon. Tune into More Than One Lesson in the next couple of weeks to hear more about it.
Excellent. And we have first time on the show, person who shares a lot of sci-fi and nerdy interests. Like, we just keep, like I said, I mentioned it earlier, I don't know when the show will actually start for the actual podcast, but we, me and Mike Petit, we... did I do that right? Is it Poteet?
That's right.
Okay. Yeah. We keep running into each other. We're like, Doctor Who, we keep running into each other. Yes. You know, Star Trek, we keep running into each other. Like, between you and Mark, I don't think anyone reposts or shares more Star Trek news or funny things on Facebook that I actually think are funny and are worth my valuable likes.
Well, I'm glad you think they're worth your ones. Yeah.
Well, it's just I think both of you just we both think the same things are funny. So, yeah. Mike, I'm glad that you're here.
Thank
you for having me.
He is a real world rookie.
That's, oh gosh,
this alliteration is going to go on the whole show. Yeah.
Star Trek Beyond and Mark's magical
alliteration and
malliteration, malicious malliteration. Anyway,
nice to have you, Mike.
So,
nice to be here.
Yeah, so Mike, with you being new to the show completely, I kind of want to ask you this first. And again, I want to preface it just a little bit. I mean, this is a film that we knew we would get with the reaction to Into Darkness and the fact that it did a little bit of Into Darkness being the second kind of Kelvinverse rebooted J.J. Abrams franchise film. It you know, some people really liked it, some people didn't really like it that much. It didn't make near as much money as people thought, and they're kind of like, are we even going to get any more Star Trek films? If we are, who's going to do them? Is it going to be any good? Is it just going to keep kind of going maybe downhill, or will we never get to... It doesn't matter. There's lots of not universal acclaim for Into Darkness, which left us kind of wondering what was going on. But Simon Pegg, who, if you are into sci-fi or nerddom at all, you probably recognize from many, many things, took up the mantle, wrote a screenplay with the help of Doug Jung, I want to say, or Young. Anyway.
Yeah.
And they grabbed David Lynn from the Fast and Furious franchise, who has proven that at least in the past years, he can make a summer blockbuster film, even though it usually comes out in April, and got the gang back together. And Mike, what were your expectations going into Star Trek Beyond? Like, knowing that we were getting a new Star Trek film and... you know, we might not have gotten one, but then how did the film deliver on those expectations? Did it kind of fall short?
No, it did, because my expectations were cautious optimism.
Mm-hmm.
I really liked Star Trek 2009.
Mm-hmm.
I've consistently liked it with each reviewing of it. It doesn't really feel like a Star Trek story to me because it's so focused on the hero's journey and the one man's destiny, which I don't think is a prevalent theme in Star Trek. It's much more suited for Star Wars, you know, the one person destined to make a difference mm-hmm. on a cosmic scale. But grafting that onto a version of the Kirk character, I thought it worked fairly well. And I really liked Zachary Quinto as Spock, and I liked some of the changes they made to the mythos. And when they blew up Vulcan in the 09 movie, spoilers, I was sitting there thinking, wow, they're really doing this. They're really going to do something different with Star Trek, and I was okay with that, and I really enjoyed that movie. Into Darkness, I wrote about it for the Sci-Fi Christian after I'd first seen it. I wrote a debate with myself about whether I liked it or not, because I felt so conflicted about the thing. Star Trek II is my my Star Trek. That introduced me to the franchise. I didn't become a full-fledged fan right away, but that was my first exposure to Star Trek at 10 years old, and you know, the golden age of sci-fi is 10, 11, 12. So I fell in love with that movie and later with the whole franchise.
And you're talking about Wrath of Khan.
With Wrath of Khan, yeah. So to see them riffing on that, let's say, in Into Darkness, I had a lot of mixed feelings, and as I get more distant from that movie, I like it less and less. But I was cautiously optimistic. Now, when the first trailer for Beyond dropped, I was really not happy. I wrote another article for the Sci-Fi Christian saying, there's nothing new here. This is more than, you know, all the explosions and mindless violence and action and blah, blah, blah. Yeah. But then as words started to come out from advanced reviews and, you know, I wasn't seeking out information about it, but enough positive buzz reached my ears. I thought, mm-hmm. well, and like you said, Simon Pegg, has bona fide sci-fi credibility and is a Star Trek fan himself. So I was cautiously optimistic, and this is a long way around to answering your question. Yeah. I apologize. But I went in and came out thinking that really did feel like Star Trek, and I really had a good time. I said it feels Star Trek-y for the first time in this Kelvinverse. It really I really came away thinking that they channeled the spirit of classic Star Trek pretty well.
I would jump all over that, but I don't want to say too much in agreement because I want to give our other guys kind of the same thing. And Mike, that's exactly what I was hoping for. I was hoping that you would kind of fence the table a little bit, and then, or you know, just set it up and hit it out.
No. Everybody can come and say whatever they want.
So Reed, same question. I think Mike made a really good point about the first trailer. When the first trailer, everyone who I know who was excited about Star Trek did a collective kind of after the first trailer came out. So
right.
That's why I'm kind of curious about expectations, because we have a lot of history. We have people who are really into the the original series, the Next Generation, and stuff like that. Then we have people who just came on board with the 2009 Star Trek. Then we have people who were on board with the 2009 Star Trek but saw this trailer, and et cetera, et cetera. So where were your expectations, and did the film deliver on those expectations?
I'll be able to fast forward through a lot of my thoughts because I would agree with literally everything that Mike said. I grew up, obviously, like I'm a child of the 80s. I wasn't around when Star Trek initially aired, but I still grew up watching the original series on reruns. But I did watch Next Generation live. And so I kind of grew up, I am in the minority among my peers and fans, but in the Star Wars versus Star Trek argument, I am consistently 100% of the time a Trekkie. I love Star Wars. I won't take anything away from Star Wars. I won't even criticize Star Wars. There's just something about the Trek universe that has always communicated more to me and that I've responded more deeply to on a consistent basis, perhaps because I grew up with them regularly on my, weekly TV viewings versus Star Wars, which were far more spread out. I don't know if that's got anything to do with it. But besides that, I definitely Wrath of Khan is my eighth favorite movie of all time, not just, in the Star Trek universe. Wrath of Khan is a very dear movie to me. So I had the same sort of responses to Into Darkness. My biggest complaint when I walked out of Into Darkness, without potentially spoiling any of the things that they do there to allude to Wrath of Khan.
You should just
spoil away.
So when they flipped that entire scene, that scene in Into Darkness, which is supposed to be so emotionally gripping with Kirk making the sacrifice to Spock, I'm like, this is in some way clever, but I spent that entire scene thinking about a different movie, and it took me so far out of the experience of the movie I was watching that it then just felt like somebody was trying to write a kind of homage or love letter. Then I felt like I was watching YouTube versus being sitting in the theater, watching something. And then having been said, I think Into Darkness is still a stylish film. I love the sort of the new paint job they put on the Klingons. I like some of the character beats that they did outside of the Khan referendum, but I really do wish they had kind of just left Khan on the table and done something different with it. Not taking away from anybody, I think there's still some quality there, but Into Darkness is definitely something that's a little bit on the lower scale. I also did the collective groan when I saw the trailer for Beyond. I was like, man, Abrams is not involved. Here we've got, I love Beastie Boys, but here we've got Beastie Boys in the trailer. What's happening right now? And so I'm sitting here like, what is going on? It feels like they're grasping at straws. So when I went into Beyond, I'm a Star Trek devotee. I mean, they could issue a movie in the theater and go ahead and tell you from the trailers, this is just going to be a slideshow of stills from the show. And I will pay down my $10 or my $13. I will sit in that theater and I will watch that movie. I am a Star Trek devotee.
Just made Movie Maker. Lots of Ken Burns effects.
Yeah,
exactly. So I was very excited to see Beyond, only for the fact, I'm sitting in there, it was kind of an anniversary date for me and my wife, and we sit in the theater, and then the music starts, and I get all excited and grip her hand and everything, because I just get giddy about that kind of stuff. Now my expectations were, man, I hope this is good. Like, just give me like Search for Spock level good. I don't need it to be Wrath of Khan. I don't need it to be, you know, 2009. Just give me like Search for Spock level good, and I'll be fine. And what I walked out with, I said it like within 5 to 10 minutes of walking out, I said the 2009 reboot is more energetic, and I think in most ways is more fun. But this is the best of the Star Trek reboots in terms of representing Star Trek and in terms of doing what Star Trek does. This is the bullseye. This is it feels fresh. It also, in so many wonderful ways, honors the original series and the people that were involved in it in a great way. I won't get into too many specifics here because I don't know where you want to take the conversation, but I just thought overall it was so enjoyable and so refreshing to walk out of that and go, what a great Star Trek story. It's just a really nice new Star Trek story, and I felt like it really fits so well in with the canon of everything, and really sort of, in many ways, I'll make this my final statements, in many ways sort of bridges the gap, even I think in more ways than the 2009 reboot does, between those two fictional universes in such an organic and a really touching way in many ways.
Well, I am giving you a internet Skype high five because, you know, again, not to take anything away from Star Wars, but also Trekkie through and through. I didn't know this about you. I kind of assumed it about Mike. I know it about Mark. Just to make sure we all have very similar names.
Yeah.
But I felt I picked the right crew for this conversation mission. And having that backed up makes me feel pretty good.
Yes, let me just say it is nice to be in the company of Trekkies.
Yes.
The internet.
It's like a nice.
Without
it's
a convention.
Like a nice blanket.
The internet is full of Star Wars. We have enough Star Wars.
Yeah.
Well, at least right now, too. It's nice to see Star Trek kind of cutting its niche. And Reed, like, again, kind of like Mike, I'm agreeing with basically everything that you're saying, like how you're seeing kind of the ups and downs of the new, you know, Star Trek versus Into Darkness and the different things Into Darkness did and kind of where you were at, especially with your expectations. Because I remember sitting in that theater, someone said, do you think this is going to be any good? And I said, I don't care if it's good. I just need it to be good enough. You know, I just need it to be good enough that they make another one. I just want to see more Star Trek movies because, you know, I probably wouldn't have gone to the extreme of saying that, like, I would have been watching the slide, you know, paid $10 to watch my slideshow. But honestly, that's probably an accurate representation of what
and not even good enough just to make another movie, but good enough to continue the Star Trek, feed the fandom and build the fandom because, you know, like, all of us Trekkies sitting here are like saying this, you know, I'm going to say the same things about 2009, about Into Darkness and all that stuff. And about this one, you know, this one feels very much more like a Trek film and a Trek story and a Trek setting. And there's, you know, a lot of layers to that, what we can go into that. But, you know, sitting here, we think the same thing about these movies. These are kind of like, The fan base was dead for Star Trek after, you know, Enterprise and that TV show. So the TV shows died, and we needed a jolt to get the general public back into, you know, being interested in Star Trek, so that the whole consensus of the audience can be big enough to fund more actual Trek things, right? You know, that took, you know, a J.J. Abrams blockbuster and, you know, now three of them to kind of keep building and keep building. And now guess what? We have a new CBS series. Is coming.
We talked about this. This is a reason that this film, no matter how bad it did, was going to get an episode because episode 001 of Real World Theology is to boldly go. It's Mark and me and Griffin.
talking about
Into Darkness. It's our first episode of this. So it's always going to hold a place in my heart on top of the fact that I'm a Trekkie. But in that, we talk about, in that episode, we talk about how Star Trek, or Trek.
Trek.
Sorry, we're from North Carolina, so I'm going to talk like this.
Star Trek. We're going to go wrestle after this.
That's right. we talk about how historically Star Trek has been about telling these morality tales, and that needed to shift because people don't watch sitcoms or dramas to have morals really thrown at them, mm-hmm. like in a package. You know, like this is the obvious thing. Like it needs to kind of come at them sideways or barely be there at all, get them interested, and then let them be invested in something and kind of, you know, like any pluralist society would do, they kind of form their own opinions about anything working best for them, you know, et cetera, et cetera. We've gone down this road before. And so them having to reboot this franchise, whatever it takes to get people interested in it again is what I would be about. And that takes us to your specific thoughts, Mark. So, like I don't think actually we talk very much about this because we probably try to avoid talking about it.
Yeah.
Because neither one, I don't think you were seeking out anything, right?
Mm-mm.
I was trying to avoid all my, keep my expectations low. Yeah. Don't watch any more trailers. Even though they were like, the second trailer is so much better. It's like, don't care. Don't want to see it.
Well, yeah. I mean, I watch more trailers than you do, mm-hmm. but yeah. I mean, you know.
So where did that put your expectation level?
My expectation level is the same it was for same for Into Darkness. I think when 2009 came around, it was like, you know, this is new, this is weird, I'm not sure what to expect, it could be bad, it could be great, you know, I don't know. And I have more of a connection to Next Generation than mm-hmm. I ever did with the original series. I still haven't seen all of the original series episodes. I've seen a lot of them, but, you know, some of them are really long and really boring.
They're very...
let's just be honest.
Yes, they're very old and very
Spock's
old sci-fi.
Brain, everybody.
I mean, let's just be honest. But yeah, no, I've seen a great deal of Star Trek, and I've seen the Next Generation, I don't know, several times over, all the way through. And I'm a huge, huge, huge Jean-Luc Picard fan. And so, you know,
oh, really?
Did
you name your son Jean-Luc? Did you?
Yeah. No, I didn't. I didn't go that far. but yeah, so that was where my heart for Star Trek was and still remains. So going in 2009, it was kind of like, okay, well, it's a Star Trek centered movie. This could be cool. Into Darkness, I had more of a like, okay, so it's not going to be a Star Trek movie, but it's going to be fun.
Benedict Cumberbatch, right?
Right. It's Benedict Cumberbatch, and I'm a huge Benedict Cumberbatch fan. So that drew me in, and I knew it was going to be entertaining. You know, 2009 movie just alone was just so much fun. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was so much fun. It was so well done. Such a good movie. So thrilling and all that stuff. But and I thought they paid pretty good homage back then. I thought they did. And,
yeah.
And looking back, still do. Maybe even more so now. I understand a little bit
still
more.
Still gets me all weepy.
Yeah, a little bit. But this one, I guess as far as my expectations were the same. I mean, just going in thinking, okay, this will be a Star Trek-ish, you know, centered movie that will be a lot of fun. You know, and you knew what to expect. And, you know, people were down on Jeremy Lin. And, I mean, I haven't seen
David
five,
Lin.
Huh?
David Lin? Jeremy Lin?
We have a friend named David
That's
Lin.
Right.
That's right. But, yeah, you know, I haven't seen Fast and Furious 7, 8, 7, 6, 7, whatever. I haven't seen him. So I didn't really know what to expect of him. But I was actually a little bit relieved that J.J. Abrams was not directing it because of his lack of understanding of Star Trek that he had admitted to not having. And so, you know, I knew from what I read, you know, Lin was a big fan, and, you know, Simon Pegg is an enormous fan. And so he wrote it and was part of a big part in writing it. So I had a little bit more hope, I guess, but it delivered. It's a Star Trek movie. I mean, I texted you right after I got out of the theater and I said, now that was a Star Trek movie,
mm-hmm.
and you know, and we should explore what that means. I think, you know, because it is. I mean, it more so than much more so than the others for a lot of reasons.
Mm-hmm. Well, there is one thing,
and it's also still a ton of fun. I mean, it's just as fun, if not more so, than the others, and just as well done and acted and all that. So.
Okay, so I have to correct something because I know I've said it wrong, and now you said it wrong. It's Justin Lin.
Justin Lin, sorry, whatever.
Because Jeremy Lin,
Jeremy Lin plays for the Knicks, or did play for the Knicks.
He used to play for the Hornets.
Man, we're bad at this.
We are so bad at this.
This is killing our credibility.
No one should even listen. You should keep listening to this podcast. So, so something that is going through all of our feedback is that, yes, fun, yes, summer, yes, big explosions, great. Entertainment, but there's this phrase that says, yes, this is a Star Trek film. So since it's been in most reviews described both as a true summer action film and a film that is reverent to the original series, what does that mean, Mike? Like, what about this film makes it a Star Trek film?
I think I have a hard time pinning that down whenever somebody asks me to, mm-hmm.
you just
to find
know.
The essence of Star Trek. Because all the answers you often hear about, you know, optimism for the future and mm-hmm. Morality tales, that's all part of it. But in isolation, any one of those things never seems to do it justice.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know. One thing that makes it a Star Trek film, I think, is it has a very strong sense of wonder. And that phrase gets used a lot, too. But
yeah,
for me, that really is a large part of what Star Trek is just kind of being in awe of what's out there and amazed by it all. Now, interestingly, though, with Beyond, when I most felt the sense of wonder was when the Enterprise was pulling into Yorktown base.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this kind of Tomorrowland times 10. on the edges of the Federation.
Yeah.
And I thought, you know, that's a big ship, and here it is just dwarfed by this crazy, you know, I don't even know if they could build it, space station. And so the sense of wonder there was, wow, look at what we could do if we put our minds to it. You know, and obviously not that in the real world, but think about what
Yet.
We are capable of doing. And so that was the first time I'd seen one of the JJ films really put a spotlight on that. You know, there's nods to it when Captain Pike tells Kirk in the 09 movie, you know, the Federation is a humanitarian armada, blah, blah, blah. You know,
I think that's exactly how he says it too.
To be an armada, but anyway, that aside, so there's nods to it, but this was not afraid to put it front and center, that bright, shiny future, you know, where people are, where a variety of people and non-humans are all living together, you know, in this technological marvel. I said when I got out of the theater to one of my friends, well, at least in this one, Earth wasn't in danger. He said, oh, well, of course it was. The space station is a surrogate for Earth. But yeah, he's right on that. But anyway, that sense of wonder of just being kind of I've only seen the movie once so far, but I don't know if that makes me a bad Trekkie or not.
No.
I've only had a chance to see it once so far. But so I haven't got all
the
details.
Well, we're recording it fairly soon after it's been released, which is, you know, it's given us limited time.
Yeah. Right. But that is one thing that sticks out very clearly, is that watching the Enterprise pull into that space station was really a thrilling thing to see. And that to me, that kind of just an amazement at what might be possible in the future.
Yeah.
That a Star Trek film for me.
So I like that, because that hits on one of the things that I wouldn't have said makes a Star Trek film a Star Trek film. And that is that when I watch this movie, it's one of the first times in without having a TV series to back it up, I felt immersed in a actual Star Trek universe.
Yeah.
Like there was just, there were these big buildings and everything seemed like it had a reason, and it looked like someone thought out like how you would do all these things, how would you get the starship in there? How would you get it out of there? What would it look like? What would a city look like? Mm-hmm. You know, it had an Elysium feel, you know, with the kind of circular city thing.
Yeah.
And I just felt, I felt really immersed in the Star Trek universe, and it did give me this sense of kind of hope and wonder, and I wanted to spend time there, which was great. But Reed, I'm wondering the same thing. Have you really thought about how to pinpoint what makes it more like Star Trek than blockbuster?
I think that one of the things for me, and I don't know if this would be the definitive answer, but I know it's definitely high in the list for me of reasons why I would say it feels more like Star Trek and why it kind of bucks against the trend of normal blockbusters. There's a thematic through line that it has that I think is very true to all of the Star Trek TV series and the entire Star Trek universe in general. I think this is, you know, I can't speak for Roddenberry, can't even speak for people who've known Roddenberry, but there's a definite sense throughout all the series of a through line of collective betterment,
mm-hmm.
that we're reaching, we're reaching together towards something greater, whether that be and admittedly, and again, we're having a conversation at least to a degree about how this relates to spirituality. And, you know, we'd have to admit that that Star Trek in many ways is kind of a very humanist universe in terms of its ideologies. However, there has always been this consistent thread of we need to join forces and reach towards something that's greater. We don't succumb to the lowest common denominator. We don't just fall back on our own, instincts. And we often have to buck against those baser instincts to try to, to try to reach towards something higher, even if that thing seems impossible to reach. And so one of the things in this film specifically that I just adored was the fact that how deep into spoilers do you want to get?
We'll pause for a second. Dear listeners, thank you for being with us this long. We're going to talk about everything that happens in Star Trek Beyond.
Yeah.
If you haven't seen it yet, well, you should have. We appreciate you being here. Feel free to pause this podcast, go watch the movie, and come back. Or Reed is getting ready to spoil the movie for you. Thank you for listening. And we're back.
All right. We hope you enjoyed the movie. We know you did. So here we go. When this entity, which there was some symbolism that I saw that I don't want to derail too deep into about how these kind of sort of nanobite-esque ships are, collectively working together, but they're disparate parts. They're this kind of disjointed organism. When they attack the Enterprise and they decimate it and they utterly decimate it. If there's anything that the films love doing for reasons completely inexplicable to me, they love blowing up the Enterprise. They just love destroying a ship. So when they do that, what I got so excited about was I see Kirk and Spock, or not Kirk and Spock, Bones and Spock get into one pod. Yeah. I see, Sulu goes over here. I see Uhura is trapped with the main big bad. I see Kirk, fly out in an escape pod. And I got so giddy sitting in my seat because I'm like, they are literally shattering the pieces of this core crew. And I am going to get to watch how step by step they all come back together. Mm-hmm. And as they come back together, they reach towards this other goal, towards this other thing. And there is something that maybe it's just a personal thing for me, but that is something I have always adored about the Star Trek universe that is present in most of the episodes of the show. Somebody will get trapped somewhere on a desolate planet, or somebody will be separated from the crew, and the crew is not going to give up on them. They're going to continue to, to try to bring them alongside. Red shirts aside, don't wear a red shirt.
Well, I mean, they're trying too.
Hey, Picard wore the red uniform, so...
Yeah, see, there you go.
It's busted.
One of the things, since and speaking to Picard, and I know we're talking about Beyond here, but one of my favorite quotes ever in the Star Trek universe, I'll drop two, one from Picard and one from Bones, and these won't be verbatim, but there was one situation where Picard was asked, like, how do you choose between one life and the life of millions? Mm-hmm. And Picard answered, he said, I refuse to let arithmetic answer that question. Yeah. And I was like, oh my gosh, chills even just thinking about that. Like the power of life.
I believe that was Insurrection. That was one of the worst Star Trek movies, but it had a lot of good stuff like that.
Oh, see? Yeah. See, I was thinking it was an episode, but there you go. The other one by Bones is he talks about, and I know this is in an episode, he talks about how he said there's, millions and billions of stars and billions of galaxies, and inside those galaxies there's, billions of planets, and in all of that, only one of each of us. And I think that one of the things I love about Beyond is, Scotty, possibly because Simon Pegg wrote it, but I don't disparage this. Scotty has a couple of key lines to that theme where he talks about, he says, we work as a team. We do this together. Jayla, that poor character, has her fears, and she has her wounds that are keeping her from really wanting to step forward and to do what they really need to do collectively. But that is what makes it all work, is the fact that they found one another again after being just literally blown apart, and find one another once again, and then come together and in unity and as a team seek to overcome this thing that has threatened the survival of their people. And so that's, to me, what makes it a Star Trek film, is it's tapping into that collective betterment idea that, we are in this together, and we're going to do this together as a team. The 2009 one was really focused on the relationship between Spock and Kirk, and that's fine. You know, it didn't bother me at all. But this one, and Into Darkness, was just kind of trying to find its way in there. But this one was so focused on this is who we are, and that's what I appreciate about it.
Yeah.
So I'm hoping that we can take that a little bit further, because, Mark, I'm curious, what else can we really explore by having the crew broken up?
Gosh, I mean, a lot, you know, and I think that they were able to explore some of it, but yeah, like Reed was saying, that is a kind of a token thing of Star Trek, and really, it's a great way to show that you have a lot of reverence for the characters, because, you know, I kind of wanted to touch on that, just, you know, the fact that, you know, talking about what makes this more of a Star Trek movie, it's just that you can feel that there is an awe about this world, about this universe, about the fact that there's a ship and there are transporters and there's all this technology and these worlds and stuff and this idea. Because you could feel that was missing from J.J. Abrams. Because if you look at what J.J. Abrams did with Star Trek, they're good movies and all, but look at what he did with Star Wars and how much reverence there is to the material in The Force Awakens. You know, there's all this just you take a little extra time to focus on these little details. That's because J.J. Abrams was an enormous Star Wars fan.
Yeah.
He was not a Star Trek fan. He didn't even ever see the original series before he did the first movie. And you can feel that in the fact that Justin Lin and Simon Pegg have this reverence, and they got to craft the story in this movie. You could just... there's just something about it's almost an intangible, right?
Yeah.
And so to be able to break the characters up is actually kind of a bold move to say that we know these characters well enough to put them in the right positions with each other. I mean, look, Bones and Spock together, it's just a brilliant pairing. I mean, it's a wonderful pairing because, you know, and I saw them kind of explain this in an interview, you know, all of these characters are so three-dimensional at this point, they kind of write themselves. And so being able to understand that about these characters that you're writing and creating this enormous movie around and just allowing them to write themselves, that means that you know them well enough to let them write themselves. And you're not trying to force a plot point or force a character development. It's just going to naturally happen. So by piecing them out together and then bringing them back, it's a really physically just natural way to create that conflict that they have to band together, rather than doing it through, you know, drama, forced situations and stuff like that. So I don't know if that answers your question, but it takes it to that level of, like, you know, this being a fan and this, you know, the idea of fandom in particular, you know, it's everywhere now. It's a big thing to be a geek and be really into these things and know lots and lots and lots about these universes that are massive. And so you kind of see the difference between somebody who's just approaching it from the surface and approaching it from the depth of having lived with these characters and studied them and gone on adventures with them. And so I think that's what helped make this more of a Star Trek and was really the right way to go, I think, for this particular film while we are in this, you know, Kelvin timeline story.
No, yeah. So when I asked that, I'm kind of wondering if someone sees something that I didn't. And I like that we're all kind of catching on to mostly the same things, and that those things are not shallow. They're not superficial.
Yeah. Even though, like, if you look at the planet that most of the action happens on, I mean, it just feels like a, you know, 1960s Star Trek. They had a lot less of a budget, so they went out into the hills of California or onto a really bad movie set and made like this rock formation type of... It's very rock formation type of
one. It's Vasquez Rocks, only better.
Yeah, I mean, it's that feeling of just knowing that that's a Star Trek-y setting. Yeah. You know?
Yeah, I mean, as you were talking, Reed, I was thinking, even though it's a big, big action movie and it's got some elements of vastness in it, the main plot is really kind of self-contained.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
because it is focused on the people, and so it's a small movie in that sense. And I really did enjoy watching those characters work together, and I was so glad they put Spock and McCoy together, because that really is done frequently in the original series. That's where you get some of the best stuff about what it means to be human and what it means to hold on to ideals and where do you have to compromise with life and your ideals. And those two characters, I mean, I think about episodes like Bread and Circuses where they're in the jail together and McCoy basically kind of badgers Spock to get him to admit that he's worried about Jim, you know.
Yeah,
Spock never does, but McCoy knows he is, and that's the episode where he, kind of like in Beyond, don't Spock and McCoy talk about being afraid of death in Beyond? One scene. Well, there's Red Circuses. McCoy's kind of revelation is that Spock is eager to die, he says, because he's afraid to go on living. So there's some thematic resonance there. And I think about All Our Yesterdays when they're trapped in the planet's 5,000 years in the past, you know, and Spock is reverting to the primitive Vulcan ways. And so those two characters together always bring out some of the best of Star Trek's insights into the human condition. So I was so glad they went that route with this movie.
Well, Mike, I'd ask you this, kind of piggybacking on the allusions that you're talking about. Reed already mentioned, Mark already mentioned, this is a movie that obviously, since we're going to take a step back and look at this with our belief system, we know that it's mostly, it's almost like about as humanist as you can get, as much positive hope in humanity being able to save itself, come together, band together, stronger together, and building a better future. It's really interesting that Bones and Spock have this conversation that you're talking about, where Bones basically tells Spock, and I'm probably paraphrasing, or maybe I get it right, but he says, "Fear keeps us alive." Mm-hmm. Or fear is the reason that we keep going.
I think
whatever.
He even says fear of death keeps us alive. Yeah. It keeps us going. Yeah. And really, on the face of it, that's a pretty bleak assessment. I'm quite sure I don't agree with that.
Yeah. So how does that strike you when you're in the theater and you hear that?
Well, yeah. In the theater, you know, I hear it and I do have a little bit of I can't really, being not only a Trekkie, but religion nerd, as my wife and I used to say in college, I thought about that verse in Hebrews where Jesus came to set free those who all their lives had been enslaved to the fear of death. And I thought you know, we could use an injection of the gospel here, but you know, I've gone back and forth, since I became a Trekkie in the 80s about this tension of, yes, it's undeniably a secular humanist vision of the future and a humanist universe, and how guilty should I not feel as a Christian about that? I remember when Star Trek II The Wrath of Khan was making the rotation on HBO a lot back in the 80s, and some of my classmates who knew I was a Star Trek fan and a Christian, they said, "Well, did you get upset when Dr. McCoy said the book of Genesis is a myth? You remember that one line in Wrath of Khan about the
according
to myth?" And well, no, because A, literally, the book of Genesis is a myth. And B, I don't need all the characters and all the stuff I watch and read to believe exactly as I do. I think that would be pretty boring and after a while. But there have been times where I don't know if I could peg it to ups and downs in my own spiritual life. Probably so, maybe so. But there have been times where I've been a lot harder on Star Trek than at other times.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there have been times where I've talked about, of course, Star Trek's very, very bullish on what we can do as humans, but we Christians know we're tainted by original sin, and we're never going to create a perfect world. Only God can do that. But I guess also just as I get older, and not like I'm, you know, elderly or something, I sound like back in my day, but as I age, I think I appreciate more where my Christian faith can affirm things about Trek's vision of the universe and of humanity, because I think those are the things we need. You know, somebody said earlier, really emphasizing the theme of unity in this movie, I think that comes at a very timely place in our nation and world's history to have mm-hmm. a movie that says we are stronger together mm-hmm. than apart, and we do better together than apart. And, you know, thinking about visions of a hopeful future when there's so much fear in the culture around us right now of what the future holds. You know, I like those things about Star Trek, and I think there is ample room for that and resources to support that as, in the Christian tradition, you know, without denying anything about, you know, yes, God is ultimately sovereign, and yes, we're only saved by grace, and yes, we can't, you know, save ourselves. Without denying any of those core doctrines, we can say, you know, Christian faith, I believe, ennobles humans because it shows us we are created in the image of God, and God loved us so much that God came to us as one of us to save us, and you know, gives us new life and calls us friends and sets us free with power to do good things in this world. It's not just all about the world to come.
Mm-hmm. Making the bad good and the good better.
Yeah, you know, making things better for everybody here and now as an outgrowth of Christian faith. That's where I think Star Trek and Christian faith can run parallel, if not ever actually meet.
Mm. I think the most humorous thing about all the great stuff that you just said is that I think there are going to be listeners who are probably going to comment in the comment section like, did he just say Genesis was a myth? After all that.
Very definition of a myth. It fits. Doesn't mean untrue.
So without giving some people what they would love and talking or diving deeper into that specific thing, because I think it's too much of a tangent, I want to affirm exactly where you're finding that balance, Mike, because I think that's a really great way to put it. Mm-hmm. But I'd also like to kind of hear Reed, and not to put you on the spot, Reed, but I don't think Mike necessarily jumped into fully into pieces of how we probably should be hesitant to really buy into the Roddenberry vision of the future, because, you know, I want to be hopeful, and just like Mike, I have at times been more harsh on Star Trek than others. I mean, I love Picard. Like, I love when he takes command. I love when he says really great things. But at the same time, even though I've named my son Jean-Luc, like, I hear things that Picard says, mm-hmm. and I go, oh, like we're still sinful. Humanity is sinful. Mm-hmm. We're not gonna erase poverty because we would have to erase greed, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Which is really interesting, because we haven't talked about Deep Space Nine, but Deep Space Nine actually kind of breaks a lot of the Star Trek rules mm-hmm. by having like a universe where people are still making money and hoarding money and gambling and things like that. And it's very interesting to see how that works in a world where none of that exists. So what I'm curious, Reed, is like, what's the reality of sin? Like, what can we realistically hope to achieve with humanity being as terrible as it is? Like, this is utterly awful. And because, you know, this is why I'm asking you, because I know you're such a down person.
I know. Negative Nelly right here. I am I'm completely a Debbie Downer. I have a utterly pessimistic view of to cease being facetious, I will say that, like, one of the things that I usually in conversation try to point out is that most of the overly optimistic humanistic views tend to believe too much in the goodness of man. And I do think, like, for instance, Rod Serling, Mike, you were talking about mm-hmm. Twilight Zone earlier. Rod Serling said something. I think he was a brilliant man. He's a writer that I admire a great deal. I love Twilight Zone significantly. But he said something in an interview one time, and I remember I keyed in on it. He said that he believed in God, but he believed in man more. And I thought it was interesting that many, many people, and think, you know, I think, not ever knowing Roddenberry, that he might have expressed a similar sentiment of that there is this idea that we have within us the capacity to reach for something beyond ourselves. I think that to me, when I'm looking at this, and some people might hear what I'm about to say and think that I'm doing some verbal and mental gymnastics to try to justify something that I love. And, you know, to that indictment, I would have to say, let me pray about that. You hush, you know. But honestly, like, as I'm sitting here, two things came to mind, and then a third that I'll kind of wrap up with my train of thought. And the first one was, of course, Ecclesiastes 3:11, which we could harp on all day, where he says he's set eternity in the hearts of men. Mm. I think that there is within each and every person, it's part of why I think beyond just that they're made in the image of God, it's part of why I consider all life to be precious, is that there is something, I think, planted within the heart of everyone that God fearfully and wonderfully makes that says, like, there is something unique to you and something that I have set that is eternal. And it goes beyond just, yes, we all have a soul. That's great. What makes my soul any different than your soul or anything like that? What makes any of our singular souls worth Christ going to the cross for? And I think there's a seed of eternity that God has planted into each and every person that I think, whether they want to admit it or not, whatever they believe or think about ideologically, I sort of operate under the belief myself that there is something buried somewhere within everyone that calls out to eternal things, mm-hmm. whether they are aware of it or not. And so I think that when you look at a fictional universe like Star Trek, I think they're expressing these things. I have been flat out edified by so many conclusions that they've come to, that they've come to from a humanistic perspective. But then I look at it and I go, no, this is totally this scripture, and this is totally this scripture, and this is what this is. And so to me, it kind of makes me remember, and I'm going to embarrass myself not knowing chapter and verse here, but it makes me remember when Paul traveled to that place and he said, hey, you have an unknown God here. There's a statue here that you guys don't know anything about. And so to me, I'm sitting here watching some of these Star Trek things, and that's part of what I take away from. I'm like, man, they have no idea how much of the gospel they are scratching at and calling it something different or approaching it from a different perspective and simply not acknowledging the source of where some of those ideas are even birthed. And one of the things that I will say, and Mike, please forgive me for the tangent, but I'll make this very brief. Obviously, you know, we lost Leonard Nimoy last year. He was very special to me, beyond pays, I think, some very touching tribute to him, almost to the degree of breaking the fourth wall, where they're really just kind of talking about Leonard, you know. But I will say this, because when he passed away, I was trying to express to somebody why it hit me so hard, and I said this. I said, in Wrath of Khan, we have that moment at the end. Spoilers for Wrath of Khan. So we have that moment at the end where Spock makes that decision. He doesn't hesitate. He makes the decision. The needs of the many outweigh the needs of the few or the one. And he goes and he lays down his life for the sake of the ship, you know. And, you know, it's in the context of Star Trek. It's in the context of storytelling. It's not an uncommon thing for that to happen. But I'm a child sitting there watching this movie. And I'm a child who has grown up in church, and I've heard all of these stories. And it was one of the earliest times that a story similar to what I'm being told Jesus did for us plays out for me in an emotional narrative that I am following and invested in. Mm-hmm. Because I'm sitting here watching this, and then suddenly I feel the weight of, oh my goodness, he's given his life for these people. Like, he's going to stop, and I feel the weight of all of that. Now, again, I'm a child, you know, so it was one of the earliest examples of that idea coming to life for me. Mm-hmm. And where I'm going with all of that is to say, I don't know that we should ever, whether we're talking about Star Trek or whether we're talking about God's Not Dead Part 4, whatever we're talking about, I don't think that we should ever necessarily just go in and say, I am going to immediately buy into everything, to every aspect of the vision of this storyteller.
Sure.
Because the fact is that whether we are saved, sanctified, filled, the whole nine, we're still telling a story that is merely an echo of the story. Mm-hmm. And I think that echo exists in stories of people who don't even realize that they're telling it. And so I think, as with all things, as with all engagement with art, I think we should exercise caution that art and theology are not, you know, like equatable, mm-hmm. but that is not to say that they are divorced. They are, you know, present in dialogue together. And I think that what you find when you walk out of a story of Star Trek or anything else, and you go back and you say, what does this mean in my life and how I navigate through the world, trying to follow what Jesus would have me to do and trying to be the person that I believe he wants me to be? How do I take these things which have moved me or these things which this makes me think about, and how do I filter that through that? I think that's the work. And I think the rest of it is simply just a matter of, okay, they come to it from this perspective and I come to it from this other perspective. But mm-hmm. the story is still the story, and everything else is just echoes.
Yeah, you know? it's the meta narrative. I mean, that's how yes. we view scripture, and I think it holds up to, you know, it has held up for thousands of years. So, you know, I think what you're talking about is something that, you know, and you hit on at the very end there. With Star Trek, you know, is a very specific example of something that we see in art universally. You know, it's these themes and, you know, just aspects of humanity that we see and we follow from scripture as our belief system and as the meta narrative. But art just engages being human. I mean, it can't not do that. I mean, yeah. it's just inherent, and that's what art is. It's an expression of your beliefs, you know, whatever those beliefs are. And so, you know, it's like this, you know, conversation that we were having on the Real World Facebook discussion group, TM.
Join today.
Only three easy payments of $99.99.
Want to know more?
Yeah, would you like to know more? But, you know, this idea of what should Christians watch, what should Christians engage yeah. in, and I stand, you know, admittedly a little bit harshly, but firmly on engage everything. You know, I understand the, you know, things are permissible but not necessarily beneficial. I understand that argument. I understand people, you know, of course, who there's certain things you can't handle. But as a stance, I say engage because it all comes from a place that is birthed from the meta narrative, and we can always learn something from, you know, whatever it is. You know, the main example I always used to use because I'm a musician is, you know, a Switchfoot song or a Marilyn Manson song, whatever it may be. You know, I can learn and have learned and been edified, like you said, Reed. I echo that loudly, because I've, you know, look at the big three sci-fi things: Star Trek, Doctor Who, Star Wars. All of those things deal with these themes, you know, and sci-fi does it in its own.
Yeah, good sci-fi.
Good sci-fi does it really well and does it in a very specific, very accentuated way. Mm-hmm. To look at the kind of awe and wonder of who we are, where we came from, where we're going. And, you know, to speak to Star Trek itself, you know, there is this, like you're saying, Fizz, Deep Space Nine starts to break those rules. But, you know, the idea is that humanity has gotten to this point where we live without, you know, monetary gain and these, you know, kind of base, quote-unquote, sins, I guess we would say, of greed and want for more, and there's a more unified vision, but the universe has not. And I think that's really interesting, because if the universe is still fallible in this vision that Roddenberry has created, that means inherently the Earth still has to be at some point. Star Trek just doesn't focus on it. You know, Star Trek focuses on, you know, because I always have, you know, as I have unpacked that over the years, you know, just trying to say, oh, okay, I don't think humanity can be that way. But as in just really, you know, exploring that through the lens of Star Trek, it's like, well, what about the people who are still that way that you're not focusing on? And you know, we look at Star Trek's universe of and view of humanity through the Federation. Mm-hmm. And the Federation could be this just, you know, this is speculation, I guess, but maybe a little fan fiction. But Star Trek, the Federation could just be an organization that has overtaken with their vision and kind of stepped on some people that have a different vision. So, you know, there's a lot of layers to that. You can't just say humanity as a whole is now this one thing.
Well,
because it's too complex.
I would say people, the idea that the Federation has used its vision to not oppress, but to press hard into
yeah.
space with that vision is what we eventually see, the Idris Elba. as his issue with.
Yeah. Well, and Into he's Darkness.
Like,
yeah.
He's like, I don't want your future. Except he doesn't say, I don't want your future.
Are people going to get that reference if they don't know? Anyway.
Yeah, it was fine. I got it. Whatever. It's fine.
There would be X-Men, how many people Days of Future Past.
How many people are listening to Star Trek that are not into X-Men? Like, there's got to be some kind of, like, there's got to be some Venn diagram where you can't really tell the circles are actually, like, two separate circles. They're so close.
It's like Patrick Stewart's in both.
And plus,
yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Patrick Stewart, Picard's, exactly.
Picard's being humanist in both of them.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt.
No, you're good.
His character surprised me, although I
talking about Idris Elba, right?
Yeah, I'm sorry. Crawl.
No. Yeah, Crawl.
Turns out to be a... And again, I've only seen the movie once, but my impression of him as a character, I was disappointed because I kind of thought the movie, based on the trailer and what I'd heard and that great line about this is where the frontier pushes back, I thought it was going to be a story about some other civilization the Federation came up against where they said, no, we don't want this future. And you know, where they where it's the narrative of the benign imperialists, you know, and exposing you think you're helping others, but you're really being colonial. And I thought, well, that could be, you know, I was of a split mind. I thought, well, that's not really how I think of the Federation, because I really want to believe the Federation is good, but yeah. I know that the Kelvin timeline has not been afraid, like Deep Space Nine before it, to kind of explore some of the perhaps more shadow-filled undersides of the Federation. Mm-hmm. I hit the roof when Section 31 showed up into Darkness. I thought, really? Of all the things from the Prime timeline, we're going to keep Section 31. Anyway, but then when it turns out that he's a former Starfleet officer and a former soldier who's kind of, I guess it's a Heart of Darkness thing where he's reacting against peace or like in Star Trek VI, where there's people in the Federation not ready to give up the war and not ready to be at peace. It surprised me, and I lost my train of thought. I'm sorry. I was going to say it felt kind of flat because it turned into, for the third movie in a row, the motive was revenge, and it was all kind of – I mean, we saw a glimpse of his captain's log, but it was all – his whole motivation was laid out in expository dialogue, I thought. I don't know. I don't have a better solution right now for how they might have done it differently, but it didn't really. I think what they were trying to go for, I didn't feel the full force of it because his character as a villain felt flat to me, and I was disappointed because I know Idris Elba is a great actor, but I don't think he was used to full effect here. Just like I thought, I do think Cumberbatch is a great actor, but I did not think he was used well in Into Darkness at all. This trilogy has a problem sticking the landing where the villains are concerned, in my opinion. So, maybe you can help me appreciate what's going on with Crawl, a little more than I do now.
Yeah.
Well, I can, if you don't mind, I'd like to jump in on that a little bit. because I do agree with you from a craft perspective. I do agree with you about, you know, just they had to reach a certain point where the reveal had to happen and then they just sort of had to lay it all out for you very quickly. It wasn't as organic when you find out like, oh, so this is what's really driving him, really motivating him. I actually liked the fact that he was a former Starfleet officer, though.
Mm-hmm.
While I completely agree with you that it's like, okay, here's one more revenge story. That I won't even disagree with, but I liked the element that he was a former Starfleet officer, and that speaks to something that we were talking about a little bit earlier, and that is that even in this universe, even in this Star Trek universe, there is the potential that people, you know, we've talked about, oh, humanity as a whole has evolved to this other place, and it's like, well, as a matter of fact, there are still these seeds, these potentials for things to go very, very badly. Mm-hmm. And there's still the potential that you could go in this other direction versus pushing forward into sort of the optimistic, hopeful future. And I liked, although I will say, perhaps because they had reached the point at that story where they needed to action everything up and wind down.
Yeah. Oh, and they did.
Yeah.
Oh, they did. But the thing that I think I really responded to about that is the fact that you have two former Starfleet captains, one from kind of an older regime and one from kind of the newer frontier, who are battling it out. And they're battling it out, you know, over, like you said, revenge and over sort of simplistic methodologies, but it's still the idea of, okay, we could revert backwards and steep ourselves in this kind of control aspect and nihilism and all the things that we could go back to and say, because I will say that while I would be the first to admit that we need God's help if we're going to push forward into anything, few things frustrate me more than people who will say, well, original sin, we're never going to get it better. Everybody just go ahead and sit back and give up and all this other. Because I do think that, and maybe this is part of what resonates with me so much about the Star Trek universe, is I do think that there's a calling to us to reach higher, that there's a calling for us to try, in cooperation with the Lord, to try to reach towards something better. And I think a lot of people, sometimes when they realize, like, well, I'm sinful, forget it, I'm just going to, you know, and then they don't, they don't even try to be better. And I think that the sweet spot, which I haven't reached, I know Mike Petit has, but the rest of us are still trying to get there. But that, like, the sweet spot is when we can find the freedom to realize, okay, Christ has made a way that we can try again. And he's made a way that we are not resigned to that backwards momentum. But at the same time, we are the ones who have to reach forward, and we reach forward even at his prompting and at his behest. But we are the ones who have to reach forward and take hold of it, and then continue to try. And that, in cooperation with what God's doing in our life, is what progresses us forward. And I think it's that reaching forward, which, you know, Elba, because of his character's bitterness and because of he felt abandoned, and, you know, all of those things that his character had experienced, he wasn't reaching into that anymore. Instead, he was ready to just blow up the ship, like just forget it, you know, like everything just go down the drain, which it saddens me to say a significant amount of the body of Christ today is not as far from that idea as I would like to believe they are. that many people are like, all right, blow it all up, start over, you know, and we miss that cry that each of us, I think, that God wants us to have in our hearts, which is say, okay, we're getting it wrong. We're kind of backpedaling a little bit. But every new day, grace says try again. We can try again, and we can try to reach forward, because that's the way that's been laid out for us. So anyway, that was some of what he was scratching at, made me think about.
No, well, I mean, I'm feeling a lot of that. And I like where you went with the kind of, like, the way people say, like, oh, I'm civil, I just give up. Like not pressing forward into the reality of our own working out our own salvation. Like, if we have the Holy Spirit in us, we're not crap. You know, we are human, but, like, we're having a wonderful work done in us and through us. And the thing that I see Crawl, or, you know, Elba doing in this film, that while expositionally kind of convenient at a particular time in the film, I think thematically is what they were going for. Because we talked about at the beginning, or kind of like towards the beginning of this podcast, about how this humanist universe pushes us to be stronger together. It basically warns of the danger. I mean, they even have this conversation between, like, Uhura and Crawl about, like, you know, like, your unity is your weakness, kind of like your, you know, your look, you know, and we see what happens when, because we haven't even talked about, like, the personal internal conflict that Spock and Kirk are having, and I don't know if we're gonna have time, but let's hit on that by saying Kirk is having this internal conflict, and he's starting to isolate himself and forget who he is. And Crawl basically does the same thing. Out in space, you kind of forget who you are, what your mission is. Mm. The difference between the two captains that seem so similar, even though from different eras, is that Crawl is by himself. Uh-huh. Everyone dies, and he's doing the, like, I think Reed, you said, like, the Apocalypse Now thing, right? or the Heart of Darkness. Maybe that's Mike. I don't remember.
That was Mike.
Yeah. All right, Mike, you get credit. There you go. So he does like the Heart of Darkness out there, and he forgets. Like, he doesn't have people. And so, much like one of the most annoying things to you, Reed, is the people who said, oh, I'm sinful, I give up. One of the most annoying things to me, and I realize that people go through different seasons in their life, is when people say, I don't need church. I'm just going to do faith on my own.
Yeah, right.
And
right.
While I do think there, like I said, there are seasons, and God, you know, is everywhere, and you can find him in nature, you can find him in art, and you can find him in prayer time, and all things like this. We were made for community. We weren't made to be alone and figuring it out by ourselves.
Well, let me clarify real quick. We were made for community, yes. We are not made for church. Now, so, church can be that community.
So you can caveat it.
Can we go down? We don't go down that hole.
You can caveat it any way you want it, but the best way to get Christian community is in a church body. And it's not, like I said, I'm trying to say it's not an absolute.
Sure, yeah.
But... Yeah. In the metaphor,
there,
it's the
there
crew.
There are seasons. I agree with you. Know? There are seasons.
Like the alternative being like, oh, I'll just do it. Because I think it leads to the, oh, I'm spiritual but not religious. I don't like authority. I don't think there's, I don't need structure in my community. I'll just do it on my own. And well, that really annoys me.
Let's make one clarification about what you're saying about Crawl. All right. Crawl actually did, and this is kind of a plot hole for me. Doesn't he have a whole swarm of people? Like, he's got a crew, and the fact that I think, you know, okay, leave the plot hole for a second.
Yeah, but no one's investing in Crawl.
This is what I'm saying. This is my point. Crawl has a community. Crawl has a bad community. But I mean, like, no, think about that.
He probably goes to a charismatic church. Like, he goes to, like,
maybe where, he goes to, like, a
like Joel Unitarian, Osteen kind of thing.
Yeah.
We've just created Crawl with Joel. I just want to point that out
natural.
For a second.
It was natural.
Yeah. Welcome to Real World Theology. So what I'm saying is, loneliness and isolation can certainly do these things. And I think that there is a segmentation of Crawl that you could kind of see that in. But I think the bigger and better point is the difference in their communities. I mean, because if you want to look at Star Trek's, you know, kind of idea of humanity, there's this idea of humanity that, let's just look at the baseline of it, they're pushing for something more, and they're doing that together and sacrificing themselves as, you know, as an individual for the kind of greater whole in many ways that, and there's lots of layers to that. But Crawl doesn't have that. Crawl has the soldier mindset, you know, and that they kind of get this bitterness towards this idea of what humanity has become in this 24th century era. You know, and so I think there's a really great point and kind of a thematic draw from that, that, you know, just because you have a community doesn't mean that you have a good community that's going to build you and is healthy for you. Because I have been in some acidic communities that have been terrible for me and terrible for my friends and terrible for my wife. And I've seen how that is way more poisoning than having a season that, you know, you're kind of by yourself. And I think if you're leaning on God to guide you through that, I think that's okay. I'm not trying to make, you know, generalizations about people's journeys, but that's why I wanted to clarify that we are made for community. We are not made for any one type of specific community, which I know you're
supporting that saying. No, I totally agree. I understand
that. I think we see that from this film.
Yeah,
is what I'm saying.
I think Mark has made a great point about justifying why he doesn't want to go to church. So,
affirm the heathenism. Okay.
I have a great church community.
So there are caveats to it, and overall there is good community. There is bad community.
Yeah, yeah.
Obviously, Crawl has some kind of hierarchy. I wouldn't ever necessarily
call it.
Can
we address the plot hole? I guess I misunderstand the swarm.
I thought he said that, like, he found the indigenous people there or something.
Okay,
and,
maybe that's
and
what it
did
is.
Something. Yeah. Maybe I missed it. We always saw. You saw
no,
it
the indigenous
night.
People to that planet were gone, And they left this technology is what I thought. I don't know.
Well, and look at, and I want to briefly say something to Mark that I'm going to talk about thematically. Like, look at Krall's weapon. Like, look at what he does, and look at the weapon that he's. It's consumptive. It's an appetite.
Yeah.
So he has to continue to feed off of these other people in order to rejuvenate himself, and that's what the ultimate weapon does. It just consumes totally, and that's its entire method of operation. Speaking thematically to what you were talking about, you used the words acidic community, and I was like, yeah, that's right on. There are communities which are consumptive, and they just feed off of the people within them and feed off of certain ideologies or certain aspects of what's going on in the culture, and they'll just feed on that without ever like having a through line where they're giving back out. It's just this consumptive thing. And I actually really loved that about the fact, and of course it's an easy plot device from a story perspective, but from a thematic perspective, I loved the fact that how the device is neutralized is by consuming the one who issued it. Mm. And he's shot out in space, and then he himself is consumed by this thing that he was going to release to, you know, just to basically consume everybody else. And I do think, you know, to, again, just to reemphasize what you guys are talking about, I fully believe that we were built for community. And I fully believe that people who would centralize themselves in isolation, you're going to begin to rot. And that's usually what I tell people. I've had people come over to my house, and they've talked about their disillusionment with the church at large. And I've told them, guys, if you don't want to come where we're going, or you don't want to come anywhere in this little region where we live, like, just find something, because the further that you get away from that, what's going to happen is you're going to begin to rot, and you're going to begin to decay, and you're not going to realize it's happening until you're so far gone you're not quite sure exactly where you're standing anymore with anything. And I don't mean to get too preachy there, but that's just what I tell them. I'm like, it doesn't mean God doesn't love you. It doesn't mean that there's no hope for you. It doesn't mean any of those kind of things that people sometimes kind of imply it means. What it means is like a finger severed from the body. The more you guys talk to me, you're going to find that I'm the metaphor that Paul uses of us being like a body is foundational for me to try to understand what this all adds up to. And, you know, if I sever my finger, there's a very brief amount of time where it can be reconnected. And then beyond that, it's done. It's gone. And so, you know, not to say that that's true of people who isolate themselves from it, but in however fashion and whatever timeline it happens, I think that's the danger, is that you cut yourself off, you isolate yourself, then you're just going to have to feed off of, you're just going to have to get consumptive. And that's how we begin to decay to a degree. And let's face it, there are plenty of secular humanist communities that thrive because they are kind of this community idea, and that's how they thrive, is because they are a vibrant sort of community. We in the body of Christ need to recognize, like, we also are part of a community. And yeah, there's plenty of pockmarks in the body that are sick and that need help and that need repair. But I was talking to a friend earlier, and I'll stop with this. I was talking to a friend not that long ago who's kind of in that place where he's kind of disillusioned with everything. And I said, I struggle with so many things in my individual home church, with the church at large. Not even going to get into how I struggle with my brothers and sisters on social media and the things that they sometimes say and the things that they sometimes believe. But I feel there's a calling to me that says I will be able to exhibit more good and do more good and affect more change by staying grafted into this than I would if I suddenly disconnected myself and tried to then sort of start this train rolling on its own or on my own strength, even if it was just me and God. Like, I feel the calling and the need to stay grafted into that in order to affect the change that I hope to see.
I
think that's something that Star Trek really without meaning to, in any degree, sort of taps into. It's like, no, our unity is not a weakness. It is the thing that means that Krall will ultimately not win, that he'll ultimately just consume himself.
And maybe I should clarify, you know, some communities can, you know, some communities are worth fighting for, and the right community is worth fighting for, and fighting through your differences and fighting through uncertainty and you know, conflict and stuff like that, and that definitely is affirmed in Star Trek. I mean,
it's one of the biggest humps to get over when you talk to people about going to church, right? They're like, oh, well, this church doesn't do this right, or it's not the, and it's like, I feel like this is Southern church example, like a thousand. So if you've heard this over and over, but it's like, you know, how is it any church filled with imperfect people ever going to be perfect? Mm-hmm. Like, you're never going to find a perfect church as long as, you know, most of the people that go there are not perfect.
Yeah.
But finding a place where you do, where you can cultivate that relationship with God, you find accountability, you develop that community of people who actually care about you at times more than they actually care about themselves, which is so rare. I don't know. It's just a beautiful thought.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. So we're around that time again, since I'm not exactly sure where the podcast is actually going to start, where we probably need to shift gears a little bit.
But this is a supersized.
It is a supersized episode.
Shower Star Trek show.
Even a super shy. It's still at that point.
Oh man!
Because we still have to get through a whole bunch of other stuff.
Yeah, we do.
So, I will reserve the ability for any of you guys to hit on anything that we've missed. But I do want to start winding down, even though we really didn't dive a whole lot into the Kirk Spock existential dilemma. We did kind of dance around it because we would have gotten to the same place that we talked about with Krall.
Which, to be fair, I think the movie did the same thing.
Which, I think
you started off at the beginning and you kind of just framed the story with their own individual conflicts, but mm-hmm. the 90% of the movie is not about that.
So. Yeah, but it shows, thematically, I think it's consistent.
Oh, sure.
You know, I can see Simon Pegg sitting down and writing this and being like, every character's got to have this as a theme. And I think it does. And it makes...
Which, by the way, since you can't see in person, Fizz was actually typing in the air.
I'm fake typing right now. On my typewriter. Like, people write scripts still. You know, our, you know, Murder, She Wrote script.
Absolutely.
But what I would love to do in winding down is, we're all Trekkies. We all love this film. And I have kind of changed up the format of the podcast a little bit, where we don't really do favorite, specific, and come on moments, but to give you guys a chance to go in any direction. So, Mike, at this point, if there's anything else that you'd like to throw in kind of for like a final thought, which, again, can be something that you thought was just kind of silly or dumb, something that you just wanted to mention because it was so incredibly awesome, or maybe like something thematic that we didn't get to hit on, now is your chance.
Well, just to piggyback a little on what you were just saying about where Kirk is when this movie begins, that surprised me as a choice for this version of the character who's like, a decade younger than William Shatner's Kirk was in the mm-hmm. 5-year mission and was so gung-ho to get out there in the last movie as that movie began. And I had a little trouble buying that just after 3 years in, he'd feel burned out already and ready to take a desk job. It made it for a nice character arc just in the movie considered as a thing by itself. So that's okay. But I guess I don't really have a coherent last thought on that other than it felt like they were trying with the birthday and the sharing the drink with Bones. Mm-hmm. It reminded me a lot, of course, of Wrath of Khan, where that whole kind of existential conflict felt very, very natural and very earned. It felt a little forced to me. Although, as I say, it did work when all was said and done. And one moment that really struck me in the movie was as the Enterprise is being destroyed and Kirk jettisons out in his escape pod, he's looking at the saucer section crashing to the planet and you see that reflected in his I think the glass over him.
Mm-hmm.
Reminded me of William Shatner's Kirk looking at the beautiful new refit Enterprise in Star Trek the Motion Picture, as an inversion of that. And I've been thinking a little bit about, we mentioned earlier, the destruction of the Enterprise and what's with that, and I'm surprised. Maybe it's just because I don't feel as attached to this version of the Enterprise, although I like it quite a lot.
Mm-hmm.
But I think what it accomplished is showing that Star Trek really, in the end, isn't about the technology and the toys, even when they're such cool toys as a warp capable starship.
Yeah.
You know, it's about the people and the community and the relationships and all these things we've been talking about. And so they get a new Enterprise at the end, and it's the 1701A. I don't know why they do that, because the 1701 was only a few years old. They didn't have that much time to accumulate this vast legacy. I don't know. But I think what the movie successfully does by just dispensing with the Enterprise fairly quickly and not having it be about that is to show that that's not where the heart of the franchise is. It's not the cool sciencey stuff. It's the people, and you know, it's the remaining human as we push forward. So I liked that.
No, that's great. I think that goes back to what we were talking about before. About like the best sci-fi really isn't about like the space or the Flash or anything like this. It's like why the new Battlestar Galactica was so good, even though it was in space and had spaceships and robot monsters. It was all about humanity.
Absolutely.
And Star Trek, Star Trek Beyond basically just says, yeah, we know that. We're going to prove it to you.
Right.
You know? Right. Reed, you know, it's kind of same thing. Anything that you want to talk about that was just like way cool or just struck you, or in a funny way or a bad way?
There, to be honest with you, and I'm not placating here, like really there wasn't anything about this movie I didn't like. I could nitpick about a bunch of things, but I don't think there's a ton of value in them, because the moment I nitpick, my other self is going to start defending them. So I just think that would get a little schizophrenic. There just wasn't anything about this film that I didn't like. I will say one thing to the existential crisis that we keep touching on. Like, you know, Kirk is trying to kind of escape the shadow of his father and what his father did and the dare and all that other kind of stuff. Spock also, it hit me so hard. The idea, obviously, we don't live in a science fiction world yet, but it struck me so hard. Like, if there was an older version of myself that existed in this right now, and I found out that that older version of myself was legendary, that he was amazing, you know, and then he passes away, I cannot begin to describe the conflict I would have of like, man, well, now I've got nobody. Like, this is just me doing this. Like, what if I die tomorrow? Then, like, oh man, wrong timeline, buddy. You know, like, this is, and so the Spock's thing really stuck out to me, and it stuck out to me as a touching tribute to Leonard Nimoy, which I'd mentioned earlier. But it also really struck me from a story perspective of like, can I live up to the vision that I know I could be? Like, this is, I have seen, like, Spock in the Kelvin universe has been given the opportunity to literally see what he's capable of, to literally see, like, this is who I could be in tangible form, not just a dream. This is who I could be. And then that form has passed away and it's all up to me. Mm-hmm. And so I really strongly responded to that idea as somebody who, of course, has aspirations for himself. I'm in my mid-30s, and you begin to kind of see, okay, this is – I'm coming to the point where I need to start being about this stuff if I'm not already, or it's – you know, the boat's going to be drifting right on by. So I really responded a lot to that, and genuine tears, genuine misting up when he's looking at Ambassador Spock's Bok. And then he opens it up,
yes.
And sees that photograph.
Yeah.
Genuine tears that I'm sitting here like, oh my gosh, like just what a lovely note, what a lovely note that he sees all of the original cast there in this. And from a thematic perspective, because of course, again, we're talking about a kind of a meta tribute to Leonard Nimoy and a meta tribute to the rest of the cast. But at the same time, from a thematic perspective within this narrative, to see this is where I belong. Like, this is how I brought value, is that I didn't do it alone. This is how I brought value, is that I was part of this thing. And that spoke a lot to me. And Kirk and Spock both kind of come to the same conclusion, which is what I need to do is get out there and see what's there. Mm-hmm. I just need to get out there and see what there is and not necessarily be so crippled by the expectation that is you know, thrust upon me by myself and by what other people have said to me. You know, Captain Pike in the 2009 Trek said, you know, I dare you to do better, which was a great line. But now Kirk as a character is kind of living under that shadow of like, I dare you to do better. Well, am I doing better? I'm getting attacked by these little troll things. Like, I don't, you know, like, am I doing better? Like, okay, am I doing good work? You know, and the other thing too on that is like, how many of us, oh my Lord, how many of us diminish the value of our own contributions because we can only see it from the perspective that we're not quite living up to what's been spoken over to us or what's been, you know, challenged. People, I don't know if you guys have ever been, you're more, far more spiritual than I am, so I'm sure you don't struggle with this, but you know, to live under this conflict of God has a calling on your life. God has something great for you. And then I go to sleep at night like, Lord, please don't be disappointed at me. Please don't, like I'm trying, you know, like I'm trying to do, you know, and to then, as Kirk did and as Spock did, just sort of step back and be like, I'm not alone. There's other people doing this with me. I'm getting a little emotional saying this. I'm not alone. There's other people doing this with me. And what matters is that I get out there with them and do the best we can.
Yeah.
And trust that that is going to matter when all is said and done. And that, I think, is what I found so beautiful about the internal crisis that Kirk and Spock were having and where they landed. You know, one of the final lines of the movie, Bones says, you really want to get back out there and do it again? You know, like, I was just, oh, I'm just like, yes, please. You know, Star Trek 24, please, let me have it.
Yeah.
Like, just keep getting back out there. Keep doing it. And I thought that was so beautiful. And after all of that sappy, sentimental stuff, I'll just say that if you had asked me what a favorite moment was, I cannot get over Sabotage.
Oh, of course. That's everybody's favorite part. How could you not like that? Especially when it's like, okay, we got the frequency, crank up the volume right at the... And they just... Oh my God, that's awesome. Yeah.
Oh, it's beautiful.
As soon as that song started playing, I think I did like an eye roll. I was like, well, this is going to be... I get it. Yeah. 2009 Star Trek. And then, like, 3 seconds later, it went from, like, an eye roll to, like, a mouth ajar, you know?
And in a way, that moment is, like, the perfect fusion of old Trek and new. Because the use of sabotage is that hallmark of the J.J. films. Mm-hmm. But think about what's happening. They're using, as a weapon, not the photon torpedoes and not the phasers, but music.
Yeah.
Like it's novel. It's in its own weird way, kind of peaceful, I guess, because it's sound waves, you know. But anyway, I just thought that it's this song that is associated with the new films, but it's this such creative, crazy way of you know. I just thought that was a perfect fusion of the two versions of Trek there.
Absolutely. Such a good use of classical music.
Yeah. Which I guess I'll go and just jump in. Which we have gone this whole time and not mentioned Jayla, who is like one of my favorite Star Trek characters now. Like I thoroughly enjoyed every aspect of her character. She was a blast. Mm. I kind of have a lot of things that I want to point out. I'm starting to forget things, but
well, you think.
Okay.
Let me say something.
No, I don't need to think any longer.
No, you need to think a little bit longer. It's obvious. It's written all over your face. Because I want to say something about what Reed said. Mm-hmm. Because, Reed, I want to point out that it is, like usual, I'm a big proponent of all the things that you just said. But the thing that I think is most profound and that I think you could sit and ponder for a really long time is that in life, whether we want to or not, we're going to always go through to different degrees and say, oh man, I'm obviously not as spiritual as Mark. I'm not, you know, I'm not as wise and sage-like, like Mike, you know, like we're always going to compare ourselves to something, whether it be our fathers or our siblings or our pastors or
our magazine,
our sports heroes, or, you know, whatever, our president, whatever it is, we're always going to be comparing ourselves to something. But at the end of the day, we can justify it to ourselves by saying, well, you know, I know my dad did this, but I'm not my dad, right? So my dad's got different skills and stuff. So if he was successful at doing something, it doesn't necessarily mean, even though I have the same genes, that I would be able to achieve what he achieved or that I needed to achieve what he achieved. But it's really tough and, like I said, profound that in this film, Spock sees what Spock could achieve.
Yeah.
They're like, there's no doubt. There's no excuse anymore. Like, that is what he could have done. Mm-hmm. And he has to go to bed every night and say, did I do enough?
Yeah.
And so that whole thing that you were unpacking, Reed, really, like I said, I think is something that people can just sit with.
Well, and you notice at the end, too, you know, Reed, you pointed out that they drove that home. Are you sure you want to go back out there? But then they drove it home even further by the iconic monologue that is always done by the captain, mm-hmm. was done by many voices.
Everybody.
Yeah, Space, the Final Frontier. You know, it was all, it morphed into everybody's different voices. And so that it really drove that community home.
Yeah.
Am I allowed to finish thinking now?
You look like you're done. You look like you've kind of marinated a little bit.
I really kind of just wanted to point out further I caught these, and I don't know if you guys caught them, very, very subtle homages, throwbacks, and similarities to Trek lore, such as if you look at, well, the one I want to point out first is Mike pointed out, you know, Kirk being up there and looking through the glass at the saucer being destroyed and kind of falling to Earth or the planet, mirrors the one where he's looking through the glass. I think it's in the motion picture where he's, you know, that kind of awe, and it's a, mm-hmm. motion picture is dreadfully long in parts, and there's this like 15 minute section of him just riding up to the Enterprise. It's crazy.
It's 6 minutes.
Yeah. It feels like 15,
I'm a motion
Reed.
Picture apologist too.
I actually really enjoy the motion picture, but for way different ways than most Star Trek. But so that there was that, and it reminded me when you said 1701A that I just watched Star Trek The Next Generation episode called Relics where they find Scotty stuck in the transporter.
Mm-hmm.
So he has this, you know, banter back and forth, and he's, you know, it's in the future now, and he has to deal with that. And one of the things that he does is he goes to the holodeck and recreates the original series bridge so that he can go on it. And the computer's asking him, well, which bridge? And he's like, NCC 1701, not bloody A, not bloody B, not bloody C, and not bloody D. And it's just so funny that, like, you said that 1701A, because I didn't catch that they put the A on there. But
they did, yeah.
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 So that's funny. But then also, even more subtle, and maybe these are, I feel like these might be at the subconscious level of Simon Pegg. But first of all, you have the nano kind of technology of the hive mind. It's very Borg. Mm-hmm. You know, this swarm kind of hive mind that acts together. And I feel like there was some kind of like nanoprobe type of part of the... you know, a lot of it went kind of fast, and I only saw it once again. But, you know, there was that. But then there was also, you know, the healing kind of life-prolonging factor of... Crawl was very similar to Insurrection. Actually, yeah, with the Sona. Yeah. And so there are a lot of these, like, very subtle little things that I think this movie's really going to reward repeat viewings for Star Trek fans. And I really think that also helped kind of create that, you know, this awe and wonder sort of Star Trek you feel. Maybe just at the subconscious level. I don't know if they did that on purpose, but it was very like, oh, this is cool. This feels familiar to me. And mm-hmm. I can't
there were lots of moments.
More and on a different level than just like, all right, well, here's your bad guy's con. You know, as Into Darkness did, it was very heavy-handed and clunky in Into Darkness, whereas here it was reverent, you know.
Mm.
So...
Did you finish? Did you finish your thinking thoughts?
Yeah, I was all the examples I had to remember.
So, I guess to pseudo conclude us, you guys have hit on almost everything that I wanted to mention in the movie. I remember coming out of it, usually trying to give movies a star rating, which is a not very great thing to do when you're trying to evaluate art. But I just remember thinking the one word that kept jumping into my head was fun.
Yeah.
And I have seen, I've kind of, if you are part of our Facebook discussion group, especially Gene likes to kind of give me a little bit of grief about this, which I think he should, but it's true. I have been pretty down on 2016. I was so up on 2015 being a good movie year, mm-hmm. that it's kind of been a fall for me back to earth, mm-hmm. for 2016 to just be like I'm lots of times just disinterested, at the theater, which pains me because I love watching movies. So obviously, you know, we all love watching these movies. Mm-hmm. And
I know you don't.
Kidding. But I just want to enjoy going to the movies. If I'm going to, you know, throw down my $10 to $15, I want to have at least some fun, or I want to be blown away in some way. And I was both of those things when I left when I left this film. I don't know if it's because my expectations were so tempered, mm-hmm. Or cautiously optimistic, like Mike said at the beginning. But like I said, it was great and a lot of fun. And I don't think you have to be a Trekkie to the level that any of the four of us are to have enjoyed this movie.
Well, that'd be pretty tough anyway.
But so. That would be tough. The bar is set so high. You know, like if we were to go back, mm-hmm. to our kid selves, mm-hmm. and our kid selves see how legendary Trekkie we are, they would probably have a hard time living up to how just legendarily Trekkie we are.
Well, and I understand to give you a little behind the scenes, Fizz and I are in the same room. It's his basement right beside this giant bookshelf that is, there is an enormous section dedicated literally to just Star Trek novels. They are everywhere. Mm-hmm. So I've been sitting looking at, I've been sitting looking at all these different fonts that say Star Trek, and there's so many novels. So that's, that get on our level, y'all.
I feel as if I've been infected by it.
Yes. That's a pretty good Idris Elba.
Agent Smith or whatever?
Or Agent Smith.
I'm currently staring at my Lego Enterprise that I built. It's actually not Lego, it's Credo. But
okay, I was going to say, there's not a Lego Enterprise, is there? Because I would own the crap out of that.
No. There is a Credo one, and it is worth your time.
Really?
It is gorgeous, and it's wonderful.
So... outside of saying that it's incredibly fun, and I hope everyone goes and sees it, because I hope they keep making these movies, even if it's directed by Fast and Furious people, even if it's written by nerd fanboys, whatever, mm-hmm. I don't care, because obviously it's working, is the question, or two questions that I have. One, and we didn't get to this, is how do we ignore the fact that we should probably actually be boycotting this movie as Christians, because it depicts... Sulu in a homosexual relationship, right? Right? I'm so glad that we didn't talk about that. I knew someone was going to ask about it.
Why did you even bring it up?
Because someone's going to ask about it in the comments. So anyway, so I'm glad that that wasn't a thing for any of us. The second thing, which is of equal importance in asking, is now that they have taken almost all of my favorite actors and already put them into the Star Trek universe. I mean, Into Darkness gave us Benedict Cumberbatch, right?
Yeah.
And so they took my current man crush and Idris Elba and put him in this one. Yeah. Like, where do we go from here? Like, the only thing they can do in the next installment for the bad guy is cast The Rock.
Yeah.
Like, The Rock has to be the bad guy. My next man crush. Either that...
episode of Star Trek Voyager.
Yes, right? That's right. He was.
So, the only way... the only person I really think they can get... and I think they actually would do this because they... someone has a direct line to my man crush, wall... is I'm pretty sure that Oscar Isaac's going to be the bad guy in the next movie. I mean, because how awesome would that be, right?
That would be incredible.
Yeah, because Oscar Isaac,
that'd
right?
be incredible, yeah.
Right? Okay, so that was the last piece that I wanted to drop in there. But we've gone, in all likelihood, longer than we typically do, but it's all right. It's a great movie, a great conversation. Actually, a really great conversation. I've actually enjoyed this for various reasons. One, I mean, I think the better the movie is, the better conversation typically is. And, you know, great movie. So, if there's something here that you've loved or a person that you've really liked what they've had to say and you'd like to continue that conversation, I want to give you a chance to connect with these people. You can do that, one, by going to our Facebook discussion group that we keep mentioning. It's a great place to chat with almost anyone who's ever been on the show and other people of like-minded movie lovingness. So I would highly recommend the Facebook group for Real World Theology. Outside of that, Mike... where can people either find you or find the, you know, the nerdy things that you're doing on the internet?
Well, once real life lets up a little bit, I do blog for the Sci-Fi Christian, mm-hmm. at thescifichristian.com, which is not my website. Matt Anderson and Ben DeBono started that podcast, and then a website grew up around it. And I am the occasional blogger. And I do intend to get something about Star Trek up there soon, hopefully, not only because of the film, but because the 50th anniversary itself is coming up a lot sooner than I thought it would. Yeah. So I do post at thescifichristian.com, and I'm on Twitter under two names. At writer M. Poteet is a little bit more professional than my at bibliomike handle, which is more purely geeky, nerdy stuff.
I assume you're just retweeting Star Trek stuff at that point.
I'm sorry?
I assume bibliomike is just retweeting Star Trek things.
usually, yeah. And actually, some of the nerdier stuff has crept into my other feed as well. So either of those Twitter feeds, you can find me there too. And
excellent. So make sure you're following Mike. Reed, how can people follow either what you're doing, or you know, just bother you in generally on the internet?
Well, the easiest way would probably be Twitter at Reed Lackey. And you can also go to, I do have a website where I've, posted some of my own personal writings, thoughts on spirituality, thoughts responding to movies and things like that. That's just readlackey.com. The bulk of my work can still be found at morethanonelesson.com, where I'm a recurring co-host. And then very soon, as I'd mentioned, I'm going to be starting a new podcast what I will sort of tease out, you know, check out More Than One Lesson for more details, but I'll just say that my love for Jesus and my love for scary stories are about to collide full tilt, and I'm extremely excited.
Nice.
So that's the best place would probably be on Twitter, again, just at Reed Lackey, or you can check out morethanonelesson.com or readlackey.com.
Awesome. Mark, how can people get hold of you?
Generally kind of the same ways. I do quite a bit of writing for Real World Theology. So much. I am.
And the readers appreciate it.
Am I head contributor? No, I don't know. Titles. You can find me on Twitter, Mark Wingdinger. That's a bit of a funny version of my name. And that's, you can engage me there. Join the Real World discussion group on Facebook. We have some great discussions there. And that's generally, you know, just talking of films and entertainment in general. That's a really great place to engage. At least Fizz and I Reed too. I think everybody, you know, we're all on there.
Yeah. Right? I think I invited Mike too. You're in there, right, Mike?
I believe I am.
Yeah.
I just have not. It was recent, so well, I haven't fully engaged there yet, but I definitely will.
Well, I would say this too. I could quote a number of people recently who said, these are the best conversations I've had on the internet in weeks.
That's so true. Yeah.
So it's, I would definitely go there to check out the best conversations that you can have on the internet in weeks or months or years, especially with the other things that you could be talking about on social media instead.
Clearly we're humble.
Yeah, that's right. it's not me. It's all of us. Yeah. We're stronger together.
That's right. There Unity.
So
true beyond.
It's definitely true beyond Facebook. So you can follow me at Fizzification on Twitter. Join the Facebook discussion group. Go to realworldtheology.com, where you can find all kinds of things about the show. Stuff that our contributors write. We have guest posts up there. Actually, Reed just contributed a review recently that was excellent. Again, if you're into horror.
Thank you.
So we are always putting out new stuff. We want you guys to interact with us. We want you guys to join these conversations, because we get some voices in here. We have some great conversations. We engage culture. We look at the art, the questions that are being asked by artists, by culture, and it's just fun.
Mm-hmm.
Much like this movie. So, again, we're very, very grateful for our guests who have taken the time to be here. So follow their stuff. I'm so thankful for you, the listeners, for checking out this episode, downloading, giving us 5-star reviews on iTunes with comments, and just making us part of your week. Because, like I said, there's tons of great podcasts out there, and I'm glad you listened to this one. So until next episode, remember that story is powerful and entertainment is not mindless. Bye-bye.
Bye.
This podcast has been a Real World Theology production. For more information, check out realworldtheology.com. And thanks for listening.
Now this is podcasting. Woo!
Space. The final front. Sorry.
These are the other voyages.